Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at said Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning. How
well,
are you?
Well. We're moving along here at a clip, this I will say. And, of course, it's always nice to have power.
It's nice to have power.
Makes it easier to deal with animals.
Right. It makes you realize how terrible it is not to have power.
Yeah. Gee, how are we going to clean those bowls? Gee, how are we going to fill that water?
Everything.
All right. Zach in New Preston. When my dog and I come inside after a hike on a hot summer day, and there's power, my first move is to provide both of us with some fresh water. He almost always refuses it. I don't get it. Can you explain this? Should I force him to hydrate by giving him a treat that provides some moisture? Sometimes I'll give him a carrot, but I'm not sure if that's solving the problem, or even if there is a problem. Is it possible for a dog to dehydrate themselves on purpose? My dog is a neutered male border collie mix, 5 years old. He is in good health, by the way.
It's not important that your dog will hydrate when they're ready. So when my dogs get back from a hike on a hot day, their tongues are hanging down to their knees, and they don't usually want to drink right away, and probably not a good idea to feed. So when we do that, if it's dinner time, we usually wait a good 45 minutes until they really cool off before feeding them. So doing a hydrating treat is not a good idea. But one thing that you can do is help them to cool off without making them drink, or without, if they don't want to drink, you can help them cool off by cooling off their feet. You know, so if you want to, if you're really concerned because he's super hot and it's really not that cool in your house, you can set up something like a kiddie pool to have them stand in. If you don't have a place that they can cool off on the hike in water, they dissipate a lot of heat through those foot pads, and just standing in some cool water is not a bad idea. Or cool washcloth on his feet, but wait for him to cool off, and then usually he'll go ahead and drink. If he's not a dog who's accustomed to drinking much, border collies usually drink really well. My poodle does not like to drink enough water ever, and so if I'm not around to give him a ton of water in his food, usually what I'll do if I'm away, for instance, and I come back, I can see by his urine that he's super, super concentrated, then I will just pour water in his food. So I soak the food with water, and I put even a little bit extra in, or I'll take some meat and crush it up and put literally a third of a bowl of water there, and he'll drink the whole thing down because it's got the meat in it. So you can, dogs who really don't like to drink water, you can hydrate them with more water in the food.
But bottom line, which is always good to know, I mean, some dogs like soup, some don't.
And broth, yeah. But you don't have to worry about it. If he's not ready to drink, it's just because either he doesn't want that cold water in his stomach right away, or he just isn't thirsty.
Yeah, and you know, this is just a side question that I was going to ask you, because I am always struck how animals on TV during commercials behave differently than animals in your house, no matter how, it doesn't really matter how long you've had those creatures, because it's a different reality. And sooner or later you discover that each one has their own sort of thing that they do. Mm-hmm. And I've always found it, and I wonder if you agree, it's just important to establish the routine. You need to know what your particular creature, what that critter does and how they approach it. Because just because one, I used to have a dog that blew bubbles, you know, he'd just stick his entire face in the dish and the water dish, and just couldn't drink enough water. And then other ones who were, little lick here and a lick there, and that was that.
Exactly. And if you know what's normal for them, then you're going to have a good idea when something's not right.
Right. And it definitely sounds like there's real consistency with Zach's dog. In other words, he almost always refuses the water. It means he knows what he's doing.
Yes, yes, unless you're a veterinarian. I mean, I have people bring in for their yearly annual exams when the dogs are young. I have people bring a first morning urine sample, so I know what their urine specific gravity or concentration is. And I do have some dogs, my own dog is one, who runs high all the time. And then I do tell those people that, you know, your dog clearly doesn't like to drink much water. My older poodle does go over to the water bowl, and he does little tiny licks, and he really will only drink out of the toilet, actually. And he'll drink out of the river when we go there, but he does little tiny licks, whereas my golden doodle drinks half the river.
Right.
So I know that I need to encourage him to drink. And so when people bring when I see a very concentrated urine, I'll say, you know, you need to start to add a little quarter of a cup of water with each meal and, you know, mix it with food to encourage that. But more commonly, there are dogs who just drink normally or too much water. That's the more common situation.
And we, by the way, what you call drinking the river, half the we call drinking the sea. So,
because
it's more than in a river. All right. Denise in Ancrumdale has a rabbit question. And we've just done one, but she's following the news about the rabbit virus because my adult niece, who lives in Michigan, has a pair of Belgian lops she's utterly devoted to. One of the ways she's always cared for them is that every day she puts them outdoors in a bunny playpen to graze on the lawn. Now she's worried that maybe they could catch the virus from eating grass where wild rabbits have been. There are wild rabbits in her neighborhood. I told her I would ask you.
So if for people who haven't heard about the hemorrhagic virus in rabbits, it is something that 100 years ago when I was in vet school, we did learn about, and it was something to watch for in domestic rabbits. And now it's gotten into the wildlife, the wild rabbit population out in the West and the South, so Texas and New Mexico, et cetera. And so it has then passed. You know, I can be passed back and forth from wild rabbits to domestic rabbits, and there have been whole colonies of rabbits that have had to be euthanized because of this really contagious, deadly virus. So I don't know whether it is in Michigan or not. So I guess if the virus hasn't been transmitted into Michigan, and you can find this out by calling your state vet's office. So you can call the state veterinarian. She can call the state veterinarian in Michigan, find out if it's a threat at all. If it's not, then I wouldn't worry about it and go ahead and put the bunnies out. If it's close to the borders, and then it might be wise just to create your own boundary with a fence. So if you're going to put the cage outside with your bunny in it, have a boundary around that stays there so you can't have any bunnies hopping on that section of grass.
Yeah, that's really wise, actually. You know, that's probably a common sense thing to do anyway.
Right? Boxes and things like that, right?
Right. No, but I just a long time ago when I first moved from the city to the country, I was like, "Oh, look at all this space! Run free!" said I to my dogs, who one took me up on it and made a career of it. And you know, you just don't think sometimes about containment, even when you're living in town. You don't think about things the same way until you are faced with it. So actually, the state vet is, you know, obviously a really good thing to do because that's safer than checking the internet or a paper because things change, and this is what state vets are for.
Mm-hmm.
But separately, just creating a place where it's safe, where you know it's safe to put the whatever XYZ is out, is probably just good common sense.
Right, yeah. So to have the bunny playpen, but then an area around it, and I would say maybe that is, you know, a good 5 feet at least from the playpen borders so that your bunny's not coming in contact with anything else is a wise thing to do. And because the virus is quite contagious, if you know, if you're in an endemic area, I wouldn't even put them outside.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
All right. Justin Shanika in Marfa, Texas. Because our cat has longstanding health issues, regular vet visits are definitely a thing in our lives. What would you say are all the protocols a vet office should be following these days? We just relocated to a fairly small community in Texas, so we don't have much choice as far as what is close by. But we'd be willing to drive further if it meant staying safe. It's important to us that our cat gets good care, but it's equally important that we feel we can trust the clinic to safeguard our own health.
That's a very good question. The standard of care can vary quite a bit between veterinary offices, and especially if you're way out in the country. But it somewhat depends on what the health issues are and the age of your pet. So the older the pet, if your cat has a chronic health issue that seems to be stable, then is young, then a monitoring every 3 to 6 months, so as far as vet visits goes, is a good idea. Doing regular blood work, I think, is really helpful. So a regular physical exam and lab work when your cat has some sort of a health issue is super important. So, for instance, if there's kidney disease, then and your cat is not, 15, 16, then it's really important for longevity to have frequent visits, and that might be, depending on what is the cause of kidney disease, that might be every 2 or 3 months. But certainly monitoring the values, the blood work, every 6 months if your cat is very stable. Monitoring blood pressure is really important with cats who have kidney disease. If they have hypertension, they can go acutely blind. Monitoring their hydration and their physical health, looking at a urine sample. Cats who have kidney disease can be more prone to having bacteria in the urine. And if they have a urinary infection that you're not picking up for a long period of time, that can cause worse problems with the kidneys. You want to definitely have x-ray, the ability to have x-rays. You need to be able to monitor for stones in the bladder, stones in the kidneys. It's a little bit difficult for me to be really specific about that, but your veterinarian should be, if you've got an older pet, your veterinarian should be recommending at least biannual exams. Because if you think about it, if you've got a 13-year-old dog and you have him seen once a year, that's like taking your 80-year-old grandfather to the doctor once every 5 years.
Which in some cases is probably, I'm joking. Yeah, don't, that's...
That's probably a good thing. What do you think? So you're looking at, think about how quickly your pet is aging, and if you're going to a veterinarian who's doing a really good, thorough physical exam and paying attention to the particulars in the lab work, then and you feel comfortable with that. The other thing you need to do is educate yourself about what the problem is, because if you're doing some reading and your veterinarian is not recommending what you are reading is typically done, then you need to look for someone else.
And separately, because they're in Marfa, I get the idea, because all roads lead to COVID, that they're also asking about what are most vet offices doing, what broadly COVID adjustments have various offices made as far as...
Sorry, I skipped over that part. So people, veterinarians are networking extensively about what they are doing, and most veterinary practices are still doing curbside service. And what that means is that we're not treating your pet in the car, that we're having you come and we're bringing the pet into the office and being super careful about not to contaminate your leash and collar, and or your dog. So, you know, touching your dog with very clean hands. I personally don't wear gloves because I wash my hands and wash my hands and wash my hands. And so I'm not transmitting anything from myself or the environment. However, my staff often will wear gloves in between. They change gloves for every pet. We keep our own leash when we take them from the foyer. We keep our own leash, and that leash goes into a bucket of sanitation as soon as your dog is back in their own leash and collar. So we all wear masks. We wear masks inside, outside, all day long, and we don't allow anyone at the practice without a mask. If someone shows up, we provide a mask for them. So you just want to make sure that your veterinarian is following really safe protocols, and it's fine for you to ask them what they're doing. You know, if they're letting everybody in the building and you're seeing, if you're seeing more than one person going into the building, as far as a client goes, or if you're seeing the workers without masks on, then I would hesitate to go there.
And because they're clear that they'll drive further, it's probably worth calling around. You know,
Yeah, and you can see on the website a lot of people are posting what they're
doing,
their practices are, and we really need to. What I believe we really need to be super careful because we need to protect our employees.
Right, and it's also consistency is just hugely important. It's almost comforting, you know, if people do X, Y, Z, and it's the same X, Y, Z within these parameters, you're going to have a better sense that all right, everyone's it's more or less on the same page.
Exactly, and that everyone is feeling safe and not having to have anxiety all the time.
Right.
So our biggest problem is the cell phone usage. We have many people who have cell phones and they don't have service in our parking lot, or I don't know. It works well oftentimes, especially if people are parked right up front. But if they wander off because they're waiting, then we can't get service. I'm running outside, you know, seems more and more often. A lot of times older people don't know how to work their cell phone. They have one from their children, and they don't even know how to answer it. So
there's a communication aspect. Like
yeah,
perhaps.
So when you call and you make your appointment, say, you know, so I call from the, they should be telling you, you call us from the parking lot, and then we will send someone out, and then, you know, we usually will have you get the pet out of the car. Now, if you've got a cat in a carrier, then we have you come into the foyer and leave your cat, and we don't go out there to pick up the cat until
you've left.
We've left, and then we were very careful not to contaminate your cat carrier.
Right.
So the more particular they are on the phone with you, I think the better.
All right. And that's a good way to get a sense. It's called communication.
Right.
All right. Lila in Bantam, right before the pandemic hit, I had started taking my 11-year-old Siamese in for acupuncture for her arthritis. My vet is no longer offering that service, and it's not clear if he will ever resume. For now, he's only taking emergencies. What's my best option? Wait until I can find another place that is offering it? Or is there another alternative I could be considering?
There are people who travel who might come to your home. Now, it's easier with dogs because they'll work outside. You can't really do that with a cat, but you could certainly try to find someone who will travel to the house, and they're not going to probably want to sit in a room with a person, but if your cat is accustomed to acupuncture and is really relaxed by it, then that veterinarian might be able to do it at your house. You also could make sure that your Siamese is on the right supplements for arthritis. So a good joint supplement like Dasaquin Advanced and a high level of omega-3 fatty acids will help to ease that osteoarthritis. Cats don't do well on drugs for arthritis. I think that, you know, early on, we had a whole big problem with having employees and people not wanting to work and people being afraid. And so what we were all having to do is cut back to just emergencies. And I still can't. I'm still too busy with the staff that I have and the ability that we have to be careful to take on any new patients, but I'm not doing only emergency work anymore. So hopefully that will work out with time, and your vet will start to be able to do it. You know, one of the difficult things is taking all of that time that acupuncture needs when you're actually trying to see so many patients in a day, and you can only see one at a time, and you're having to be careful. So it's really the time element. If your cat will go in without you,
yeah.
So if you're needed for the acupuncture, then you certainly could call around and see if someone would come to the house.
But it is also getting a little more. I'm just noticing out there that you've got a little more latitude. It was absolutely so that you could only get emergency. It was only during the more stringent
right.
lockdowns, you could only actually yeah. offer emergency care.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that sometimes it might be worth it for Lila to check again also, because
absolutely.
There's
good idea.
There's there's been some relaxation of that, just for obvious reasons, because you know people are able to be a little more relaxed about how to bring it. And again, especially if the cat's already seems to be somewhat accustomed to it, I think she's got a shot is what I think.
Yes.
And we've got one similar, not surprising, from Dorian Winstead. I'm severely immunocompromised, so I'm reluctant to leave the house unless absolutely necessary. I'm wondering if there are basic health checks I could be giving my pet that would act more or less like checkups until this crisis has passed. If so, how would I find out how to do it? For example, the vet tech always takes the temperature. Can I buy a special thermometer and learn how to use it? That kind of thing. I have a full-grown foxhound. Thank you.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is some of the things that we do, most of the things that we do in the office, the dogs have a huge amount of respect for the authority, for some reason, of the veterinarian. And so they allow us to do things that they don't necessarily allow you to do at home, like take their temperature. And so someone who's immunocompromised, I would worry about a dog bite, really worry about a dog bite. So it depends on how well you know your dog and what you can get away with and whether you have someone at home to help you. Taking temperature, they really don't like, and you have to get very good at it in order to make
do
that
right,
happen.
Right.
We do some distraction techniques, and I always scratch their bum on the top of the tail while I'm in, and I make sure that I'm not putting it in crooked at all, and you've got to have some really good lubrication on there. But there's not really any reason to take a dog's temperature unless they have some chronic disease or some acute disease or they're not feeling well. It's helpful if you can check your dog's ears, but you're looking at just the outside, but that can be helpful as far as how much discharge there is about whether they need to go to the vet or not. Can you check teeth, you know, safely, lifting the lip, and you have to look all the way in the back to check those teeth and see if there's a lot of tartar buildup, whether their gums are red. I can't think of a good source that tells you really how to do an at-home safe physical exam, and I think it's because of liability purposes, and I think it's because every dog is different. And what I would suggest is that you know your dog. Most people know their dogs really well, especially if they're quarantined with their dog. And that if you see a problem, you know, you do your best. You're going to start to see them maybe scratching more at the ear, some runny eyes if on one side if they have an ear infection. And then if there's any way to get a friend to bring your dog to the vet, that's really the thing to do. You can pass that leash through the door.
Right.
And you can call and speak to the veterinarian personally, or ask the vet to call you so you can get the information, but have someone else bring your dog to the vet. You know, there are things like lymph nodes that are important. Whenever I have a dog with an ear infection, I always check to see if there's any involvement with the lymph nodes in the area. And you can probably find some information on the internet, but I don't know. I know that Cornell has a nice website, but I don't know what for the public.
Right.
I don't know specifically if they tell you how to do a, you know, a physical exam like checking lymph nodes, et cetera. And you really aren't going to know.
You're not going to know what you're feeling. I'm going to interrupt and just say that probably, Dory. No, you're giving great information, but I'm going to just, as we wind up, I'm going to say, because of the way that it's working, if Dory does have a car, she wouldn't even have to see a friend. She could drive the dog to the vet.
True, yeah.
And if that doesn't work, then it would, the next best thing would be to find a friend. Because,
right.
the as you say, if you're severely immunocompromised, all you need is for someone to take the little, someone who loves you very dearly to just object, and then you've got totally different problems than you bargained for.
Right, yeah. So I think that there are people out there who are, you know, who know what they're doing as far as being careful around immunocompromised people and who will help with pets, too.
Yep, you are absolutely right. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon.
Thank you.
This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. Who let the dogs out?